the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to the 64th flagship rip of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast. My name is Joey, here with my co-host Len. Buddy, how are you doing today? It's a nice day here in Southern Ontario. Are you enjoying it so far?
It was okay. I'm enjoying it as much as I can, but it's chilly over here. I mean, when I say it's chilly, it's like not warm enough that you could truly enjoy sitting outside because, I don't know, maybe it's just the proximity to the lake or whatever it is, but it's going to get warmer later this week, so I'm going to be enjoying it then. How are you over there, Joey, in sunny Hamilton?
Fantastic, man. Went out with the pup early this morning. Didn't get a lot of sleep last night because I went to bed late watching Hustle on Netflix.
That's a Hustle.
It's some new Adam Sandler movie. It was very good. I really enjoyed it. I'm a big basketball movie guy, big basketball guy in general. And so I put that movie on. It was recommended in our group chat, our Signal chat that we're in with a few of our colleagues. And so I thought, you know what, I'll put it on. I'll screen it for half an hour, see if it's any good. And then I'll watch it with Ken's another night. I watched the whole thing. She watched 0 minutes. So that's what I was doing last night. And then I had a busy weekend doing some other stuff as well. So I'm happy to be here with you and the people in the crowd. We got Boomer. Shady's here too. Good to see you guys. Before we start, Len, as always, sponsored by the mighty ShakePay. Best place for Canadians to buy and sell. And there's a lot of selling going on, but you should never be selling your Bitcoin, in my opinion. That's not financial advice, just my own sentiment. Cheap spread, great mobile app. Everything is quick. You can transfer in, transfer out. I think most of the time it takes me less than 10 minutes, which is pretty slick and very important these days, being able to get your coins and your cash off of the exchange of your choice. So they got three things going on as always. They got the shaking sats. If you sign up with their promo code Charlie Beta Peter, you can get 1,000 sats sent to your phone every day. All you got to do is wake and shake. Easy, easy. Okay. You don't get it the first time you do it, but you know, you do it for enough time before you know it, you're getting 1,000 sats a day. Second, they got the sats back card where you spend off of your CAD balance and get 2% back on your first $5,000 and then 1% back after that in Satoshis. Not bad, not bad. Mm-hmm. And as if that wasn't enough, the third thing, Shake paid, I think until the end of this month, right? That's the current end date that they're saying, June 31st is the current end date. I think that's what they're saying. I don't know if they'll stretch it out again. Let's see.
Get those purchases in before it's too
late. That's right. So you got that going on too, and you can get your whole thing, your whole purchase comped in Satoshis, which is dope. And they got another thing coming out next week that we're going to talk about on Monday night. Not this Monday, obviously, but next Monday. We're going to bring on our buddy Carlo Campisi for a short stint on the show, talk about some of the stuff going on at ShakePay, which is dope. So that's one sponsor. Len, the second sponsor, who are they?
Ledin. You want me to go ahead with them?
100%, man.
All right. So yeah, what you're going to do with the Bitcoin that you buy on ShakePay, but nothing else, you can just dump it on Ledin and earn some interest. And you could also earn interest on your USDC. So Ledin is a great place to park your USDC or your Bitcoin. Not only that, if you're in need of some money, so if you have a large stack of Bitcoin and you want to borrow against it, Ledin's there to cover you. And it's a 50% loan to value. So if you're going to fill up your car with gas or whatever else, they're there to help you out with borrowing against your stack of Bitcoin. And if you are feeling lucky, you could use the B2X option. If you think Bitcoin's going to be going up, and how much further down can it go? So you could use the B2X.
Famous last words.
You can B2X your stack and double up your Bitcoin. And when you're ready and everything's all set to the price that you like, you just pull out and you're good to go. Remember, always pull out. That's the key. And last but not least, they have the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. There is a waiting list from what I understand, and it's not available in all jurisdictions depending on where you live. So check out their website for the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. Also check their website out for the interest rates on both the savings accounts and the borrowing account. So yeah, Ledin, great sponsor. I use it. I recommend it. And it's a great place to park your Satoshis after you buy it from ShakePay.
Truly, great way to earn a little bit of interest on your hard-fought corn stash. So Len, we'll start the show as we always do, I guess, huh? The price of Bitcoin, as I pull up my phone to see limit orders hitting $22,350 US right now, down about 16% for the day on the Coinbase numbers. What do you got in Canadian?
And I got 29,000, under 30K, so 29,072 in Canuck bucks. Boo, guys, what did you do, and gals? Who's selling? But with that, Joey, I got a few things I want to talk about, if you don't mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
So number one, Yochi is asking if we could get, we could call the bottom, and he wanted us to do it on the start of the show.
I'm not willing to call the bottom. Are you willing to call the bottom?
I have my D20 die. I'll roll it and make a number there. But other than that, I have no idea what the bottom may be. Hopefully it's not.
I don't think this is the bottom, honestly. I think it's probably further there fall.
You go. Maybe calling it. So yeah, that's number one. Number two, I just want to make mention that there is the podcasting 2.0 apps. You could use Breeze and Fountain are two that I recommend. And these are programs that you can listen to podcasts on your phone. Built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. If you want, you could stream SaaS to people that you listen to. If not, you could just listen to podcasts using these programs. I recommend it because, again, they're built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. Check them out. Really easy apps to use. And I don't know what else to say besides that. Also, there's going to be an event July 16th. And Joey, we should be attending that. That's going to be in Toronto.
We'll be there. We'll be there.
That's Avenue Road, just north of the 401. I don't know exactly the specific address, but I'm giving a very generic address. So yeah, we're going to be there. It's going to be a great event. I think it's in the afternoon. Don't know the start time, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, whatever the heck it is. But it's being organized by Plate Licking Pleb. And not only he's organizing it, he also left us a review on Apple Podcasts. And read it, Joey, if you don't mind. Let Enjoy provide an essential service to Canadian Bitcoiners. Haven't missed an episode since I started listening in March. Entertaining, relevant, and fantastic guests. The only can't miss Canadian content in Bitcoin. I would, however, smash both these guys in a foot race. Cheers from the Plate Licking Pleb. Thank you, Plate Licking Pleb. So anybody else that writes a review on the Apple Podcasting front, I'm going to just read it out like I always do. Be it good or bad, I read it out. And with that being said, I'm not sure if you have any other housekeeping items you want to take care of.
I got nothing to add, man. It's good to be on today. We got lots to talk about, so we may as well dive right in.
All right. So we had a bit of a price drop today, or in the past weekend in Bitcoin. And I'm going to be really brief about this because this all happened relatively fast and I didn't have a lot of time to gather notes. And it may be a little jumbled because I was just jotting it down as it was coming in through the day. But we had about $1 billion worth of liquidation that took place within the past weekend. That's a lot of money that was just simply liquidated. People don't use leverage trades. That's not the way to go. But not only that, we also have a saga that's developing. We've had Mt. Gox. We've had Quadriga. Now we could probably throw in Celsius into the mix. And people may be asking, what the heck is Celsius? Well, it's an exchange that offers DeFi services. Specifically, they have a coin called CEL, C-E-L. And the CEL coin, which is native to Celsius network, was worth $3 back in March. And as of earlier today, I took a look at it. It was trading at around 30 cents. That's a massive drop, about 90% drop, according to my my quick math here. And on the Celsius protocol or platform, you could earn up to 18% APY in returns, and the returns would be given to you by the Celsius token, a CEL token. And the 18% APY right now is only specific to SNX. Never heard of this token before, but if you stake on that, you're going to be given 18% APY. You could also earn a lesser amount of interest using DOT, Matic, and a whole bunch more, and the rates go down from 11 to 9% and even lower from that. But essentially 18% seems rather unsustainable. Again, just check out what happened with Luna and the Anchor protocol offering 20%. And you could even stake Celsius on their platform where you could earn more Celsius. So everything you earn in terms of yield on the Celsius network is the CEL coin, the CEL coin. And Celsius, they're one of the larger players in the crypto lending space. And they have right now, at least recently as of May, more than $8 billion lent out to clients and almost $12 billion in assets under management since May. So they're a relatively large exchange in comparison to their peers. And not only that, they also have the CDPQ. This is the second largest pension fund in Canada. Nick Carter was tweeting this out today. The CDPQ has invested, along with a partnership with Westcap, $400 million of equity.
They were there early. Yeah.
And so I'm not sure exactly how this was broken down, if it's 200 and 200, but it's between CDPQ and Westcap, $400 million of equity was raised between those two. And this was back in October 2021. And then at that time, Celsius had a valuation of about $3 billion. It has since plummeted since then. And their CEO has been very active this past week and all, well, actually the past few months, and also Corey Clipston from Swan. And Corey will be on our show, and just going to, you know, tip our hand here. He's going to be on our show hopefully on Wednesday, and we'll be talking about this more in depth. But the Celsius CEO, he's calling out Corey. He says, we cannot proceed any further to talk about Celsius without talking about Corey Clipston, who has been beating the drum for a possible Celsius collapse. And he says, as for Corey, he's been saying that for a while, he's been offering people who withdrew and proved it one BTC from the Celsius platform. And in return, if you could prove that you've withdrawn this from the Celsius platform, you will be gifted free membership to the Swan private membership. And it's a $3,000 in value. And a short time ago, he actually removed that one BTC minimum. And he was just offering it for the first 1,000 Celsius members who DM'd him. And I'm going to quote this. This is straight from Corey. He says, regarding Celsius, I didn't guarantee a blow up like I did with Luna /UST, though I thought it was very possible. I said it's a shady company with a proven scammer CEO, and they misled people into becoming unsecured lenders to what is essentially a risky, unprofessional hedge fund. And he says this about Ledin. I'm just going to give a quote. He says, I like Ledin. Great team, full of Bitcoiners. If you must absolutely seek yield on some of your coin, at least use a service that cares about risk and transparency and keeps its operations very simple. So obviously a good thumbs up from Corey Clipston about Ledin. And right now it looks like Celsius is teetering on collapse. And this could have devastating effects with Bitcoin. I'll give you an example. Brad Mills was mentioning earlier today, there's about $400 million in wrapped Bitcoin that's up for liquidations at around 21,000. With Bitcoin price gets to 21,000, and we're awfully close to that right now. Celsius seems to be trying to delay some of the selling of their staked ETH to break the peg and cause a massive liquidation on ETH bulls who are levered up on the Aave /Lido play. So that's Lido.
What does that even mean?
This is all more ETH talk. I'm not exactly sure.
Holy shit.
Celsius essentially has to sell their staked ETH to give their customers back when ETH is withdrawn. This is really bad here. This is a massive house of cards ready to fall. And just recently, Celsius had instituted this new HODL mode. I'm not sure if you saw this, Joey. And if they see there's some activity that's kind of suspicious, they would institute this HODL mode, and it takes 24 hours to deactivate if you ask it. And what is HODL mode? It basically restricts withdrawals. And this is to protect users. But this was done involuntary as well. A lot of users had this HODL mode imposed on them without being asked, and there was no crazy things going on in their account. Essentially, it's like they're trying to lock up whatever's on the exchange and it couldn't be withdrawn. That's pretty sad. In fact, some people today just have shown that they were unable to withdraw and they got wiped out. And it's partially due to HODL mode, and it's also partially due to Celsius pausing all withdrawal swaps and transfers on their accounts. One guy was posting he lost $21,000. He was like wiped off. Pretty sad.
A lot of money for the average person. Yeah,
it sure is. Recently, it was showing traders on FTX were paying 25,000% interest annualized to short the sell coin. So there's lots of interest to do it. And yeah, there could be a short squeeze. I don't know, but it seems like a lot of people are pissed off with that. And this goes to show you, it's like not your keys, not your coin. And it's an extreme example, but a lot has happened this past weekend, and even it was reported that Celsius has transferred $320 million worth of crypto to FTX. This is before they announced that they were halting all withdrawals from the platform. Shady stuff. And Nexo, it's been reported that they're offering to acquire any remaining qualifying assets of Celsius, and mainly their collateralized loan portfolio. Looks like there's some value there. They want to take advantage of it. Binance had some problems earlier today, and it's none related, but Binance had some problems with trading Bitcoin for about 30 minutes, maybe a little bit longer. And today was an absolute shit show. Tron was even affected. They're even pumping money to try to fight the downward pressure over there. Tron, for whatever reason, I took a look at their charts. They've been steady for the past 3 months. They haven't had the same drawdown that other coins like Bitcoin and shitcoins have taken, but whatever reason, Tron, the shitcoin, has been able to withstand it, but today it hasn't. And there was a lot of shorts that were placed on it, and the Tron DAO reserve was releasing $2 billion to fight this. That's nuts. So it's very centralized, very crap shit. But what I got to say to everybody, take a look at CoinMarketCap. Look at the very top. There's going to be Bitcoin. Everything below that is a fucking shitcoin and a scam. And I'm even including the stable coins, because I think they are also house of cards that may potentially fall as well. But that's just my two cents, Joey. I want to hear what your thoughts are. Mine was kind of jumbled because I was just all over the place today.
It's so. Okay. We talked about adding this pretty late. We kind of like traded text in the middle of the day today. I didn't put a lot together for this. It's a good thing you did. We could have, I think, you know, riffed on this without really writing anything down, because it's just been such big news. I'll note two things on the Ledin side. Okay. We talk all the time about how we've taken a little bit of shit for giving Ledin a platform, and now they're a sponsor of the show, blah, blah, blah. I think they're a good platform, and they're, you know, obviously different than these other services, but I'll give you some, you know, examples as to why. The proof of reserves thing on Ledin is big. So every 6 months you get a proof of reserves with a hash that shows you where your funds are. It's great. They only have Bitcoin and USDC. They don't go out and look for DeFi stuff, DeFi yield with user funds, which is, like, to me, pretty easy. Like, it's a pretty easy win, but obviously some other places don't think about that. They do lending only through established institutions, of course. But the thing I think, Len, that really matters the most about Ledin is that they don't have a coin. There's no token on Ledin. Like, it's not just running this scam to enrich, you know, people who hold that token and trying to jack up the value. I, you know, for me, that's big. So I'm really happy they're a sponsor. ShakePay as well, although I don't have to say anything about ShakePay, because I think everyone, you know, knows their rep. Those guys, you know, Len, I've been putting money on ShakePay the last 2 days, and they're open on Sundays. Would make Scottie Pippen happy, if you remember that line he spit to Karl Malone once upon a time. So that's one thing. Other thing I would say, do you know when the last major Quebec pension loss was, Len?
You're talking when they lost money on an annual basis?
When they lost another big investment that they made in 2009 to asset-backed commercial paper. Greg Foss just tweeted this out, and actually someone else tweeted out earlier, and Foss put it, you know, use language I won't use here on the show, but it's not the first time that these guys have really fallen on their ass. I'm really surprised to see that pension fund has basically taken two significant losses now in the last 15 years. Difficult for a pension fund, especially these days. But I thought you summed up the rest of the story brilliantly. Like, look, if you want to pick up pennies in front of a steamroller, as they say, mm-hmm. by all means, man, I'm happy to take your Bitcoin when you got to sell to meet your margin call. I don't care if the price goes down to 20K. I'm looking, my phone is on the desk here. It's lighting up with orders that are hitting. So the price is dropping probably from even where we started the show.
Yeah, we're just a hair over 22 right now.
So, like, I'm happy to buy at any of those prices, man, because, you know, a lot of people that we've talked to, Len, I think you and me can both attest to this. You know, when we started buying in 2017, it seemed like a lot of money, those $10,000 and $15,000 buys, right? And, now, how good do those $10,000, $15,000 buys look? They look great. Even at today's prices, they look great. And a lot of people would say to us, like, man, you know, I wish I'd gotten that early. I started buying at 30, 40, 45, whatever. Now's your chance, man. Don't, you know, again, not financial advice. So I'll try and pick my words carefully. Don't readjust your price targets now that you're at this level to something lower and miss on buying a little bit of this stuff here. It's to me, still, the fundamentals are incredible. It's one of the hardest assets ever to exist. It's got so many things on gold that it's hard to really disagree that this thing is going to take at least a chunk of that market cap at some point. And, you know, we see, and we'll talk about tonight, some of the other policy positions that are leading to this thing continuing to grow in value, if for no other reason than because the dollar will just continue to be debased by poor decision-making at the highest levels all over the modern world. So don't miss it, man. Don't miss it. I think this is an opportunity for a lot of people. I know I've been increasing my buys the last few days, and I'm happy to continue doing so.
Mm-hmm. So let's move on. And this is a story that had a lot of publicity in the past week, but it since has died down given what's transpired in the past 24/48 hours. And this is a story about the Kirsten Gillibrand and the Cynthia Lummis bill. And this was released to the world back in June 7th. So it seemed like a long time ago now. And it's called the Responsible Financial Innovation Act. And it's I'm quoting this here. It's a landmark bipartisan legislation that will create a complete regulatory framework for digital assets that encourage responsible financial innovation, flexibility, transparency, and robust consumer protections while integrating digital assets into existing laws. Wow, that's a lot to digest. These are some of the key points. It better defines what is a commodity and what is a security. And funny enough that they have both Bitcoin and ETH as listed as a commodity. And they have identified who will be overseeing the digital assets. And it will not be the SEC, but rather it's going to be the CFTC, that's the Commodities Future Trading Commission. So this is essentially moving one pile of crap to another pile of crap or another location. It's just shifting things, nothing really changing in my opinion. And the bill will also create a new sandbox to let crypto firms test out new products. And this will enable us to get more comprehensive preview of the shitty products that they're going to be releasing before it gets released. But this sandbox will likely be also used as a platform that could pump products even more than right now, since it's going to be an environment to showcase some of the problems that do not and may never exist. So it's going to be a great opportunity for them to showcase it, which might not be a good thing for us in the end. And furthermore, the bill, it puts a requirement on pre-mined garbage to be disclosed to the SEC, which might be, you know, might sound good on paper, but really, what sort of knowledge does SEC have in-house to correctly make an assessment on anything in this realm? While their whole protect the consumer mantra sounds good on paper, but to date, it's failed. And it's failed on a number of fronts, Joey. We watched SPAC after SPAC. They get wrecked over a period of time. Investors are holding now heavier bags. And it's, you know, what are they doing? What sort of new wisdom or guidance can they impose on pre-mined shitcoins to protect consumers? I have no faith in them actually doing anything. But back to the bill. It will also allow for purchases of less than $200 to be tax-free. And we've been hearing about similar numbers in the past from $500. I remember hearing a number not too long ago as a possible starting point for tax-free decoration. So, but it looks like that moving the bar lower is to $200. Why? I mean, with, you know, the US dollar being debased at a rapid pace, $200 will only now get you a tank of gas, maybe a little bit more beyond that, maybe a pack of smokes. And the bill is also going to impose new federal laws on stable coins, but how will it impact Bitcoin should be minimal over the long run, in my honest opinion. And the bill has also adopted language from a previous bill from last year that sought to clarify the meaning of a crypto broker, especially hoping to protect wallet providers, software developers, and others from being snagged by certain tax reporting requirements. Decentralized exchanges might be the way around all this. Here's my breakdown from all this. Having the CFTC take on added responsibilities, this could have a negative impact on Bitcoin in the short term. The CFTC chair, he's been recently quoted as saying that Bitcoin needs to change and understand energy consumption is too big. And could this lead to limitations that Bitcoin miners will have to stem the amount of energy that they're consuming right now? Quite possibly. And you also have the White House now talking about energy usage of Bitcoin. It can make it for an easy target to have the CFTC chair get on board with imposing energy draw limitations. Does this bill solve anything, in my opinion? Hell no. There was a lot of hype surrounding this, but from what I could tell, there's little substance in this. It might help solve a few issues with shitcoins, but need to be upfront, especially with the pre-mined garbage. But it also gives them an opportunity to showcase their garbage in the sandbox. And this is something that's being provided by the U.S. government, so it's going to be on the taxpayers' dime, which would be very unfortunate. What would I like to see instead? To be honest, I thought about this long and hard, and I'm still not entirely sure. But I'm really now more leaning towards on the side of fewer to no regulations on Bitcoin. Regulating Bitcoin really isn't needed. It won't provide any additional protection to investors, in my honest opinion. And the SEC, so far to date, has proven to be a failure at providing consumer protection. The CFTC will probably suffer the same respects with dealing with Bitcoin. Bitcoin is Bitcoin. One BTC is always going to be one BTC. Once goods are priced in Bitcoin, all these regulations, they're thrown out the window. It really doesn't matter. a truly decentralized network will operate with or without regulations. And this is, I'm going to say, we had the recent China ban May of last year. Actually, it's 13 months ago. They banned Bitcoin mining. But what has happened? They're still mining Bitcoin in China on a decent clip. And that goes to show me that regulations do not work on a decentralized platform. But one thing to me is concerning is, why did they leave ETH as a commodity, not a security? Is it because the people on the bill that wrote it, are they investors? Are they
Yes. I don't know what the other question you had is, but that's the answer. Yes.
So there you go. I'm also speculating potentially they're fearful about making it a security and it could potentially tank the Bitcoin and the market as a whole. But in my eyes, I don't know. I mean, it looks like you know the answer to this. Yeah, go on, Joy. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this nothing burger of a bill.
I got lots. I first of all, I hate this. We talked on the show many times, and you and I have said this privately, and it's one of the things that has stuck with me more than a lot of the stuff we've seen and watched over the last year. And it's that Marty Bent panel where he talks about playing in their sandbox, right? We'll use that term for today since it's part of the parlance of the bill here. Why do we care about this? How is any of this good for Bitcoin? Any of it? None of this is good for Bitcoin. As soon as you start going down this road where you put a wedge in the door for regulators to guide and protect and encourage and make sure things like the 100% reserve assets for stablecoins, what do you think that, you know, stablecoin reserve is going to be? If you had to guess, Len, what do you think they're going to make sure that it is?
They should make it 100, I guess.
They're going to make it 100%, but they're going to make it US dollars. And then, some US banking institution is going to say, yeah, we're not interested in providing this. It undermines the dollar dominance, undermines national security, undermines blah, 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 blah. You can already see the way this stuff is going to go. I have some other stuff highlighted here from the bill. You know, this like CFTC authority thing, I don't like this. I don't like calling this a commodity either. I think that we should treat this as something new, something that's, you know, it's novel in its construction, but it's also novel in its sort of fluidity between commodity and asset and cash and all these things. It's got many uses. We don't, you know, this is an example of like an old bunch of people, first of all, for sure, but an old framework trying to make sense of a new technology. We've seen this fail so many times, okay? Whether it was Napster, the internet, word processing, the car, all these different things, right? We've seen this a million times, and every time they blow it, they set everything back 5 years or worse, and then eventually some private company comes in, takes over, and then they complain there's a monopoly, right? This happens all the time. This happens all the time in tech. And you're seeing another sort of, you know, the beginnings of this again now, which is unfortunate. There's a great quote, I think, from JFK, right? The times of the past are gone and the ways of the past just simply will not do. And that's what we're seeing here. They just want to keep going down this road with these old sorts of legislative frameworks. And it just doesn't make sense. We could also talk about this sandbox thing. Mm-hmm. Do you have any faith, Len, in either major American party coming up with a strong enough set of rules that would allow a sandbox to really work for a company using the sandbox to really flourish?
No.
Is there another example of this happening anywhere? The most recent one for me, I think, would be something like Uber. Okay. Like that was an easy, easy thing to let flourish over the course of 5 years. And what happened? They fought it at every single turn. And Len, that was to protect like chit holders,
yes,
from taxi companies. What the fuck are they going to do when they're talking about the currency? You think really they're going to allow for fintech companies, like digital currency companies, to play in a sandbox and develop products away from laws, away from any legitimate boundaries on the way to trying to, you know, usurp the American dollar in like domestically of all places? There's just no way. It's never going to work. You know, I also, you know, I think over the last few months, and you and me talk about this as well, we've talked with people in the chat and on Twitter about this. Are we not closer, you know, like significantly closer than we were 6 months ago to just letting the sort of fiat system destroy itself from the inside? Like, does it not seem a little closer now than it was 6 months ago, than it was a year ago? You know, it does, right? So you're nodding.
Every day.
You're right.
And tomorrow, I'll say we're even closer. It's every day. It's like,
yeah, it seems to be accelerating a little bit, doesn't it? It seems to be kind of picking up speed here. And it's not just because of these policies. It's not just because of, you know, the dumb stuff that whoever the press secretary is says on a daily basis, or the dumb stuff the politicians say on a daily basis, but it's the general sort of like the malaise and the lack of faith that most people, it seems to me, are starting to have with institutional finance, that whether it's government institutions, private institutions, banking, you name it. It just seems to me that there's no confidence that they're going to get it right. And the understanding, you know, I think that confidence has always kind of been wavering, but now the consequences for the average person are just so in your face all the time that there's no way to pretend that these poor decisions and poor policies and policies that are really focused on, you know, the 1%, as some would say, or whatever, you know, the top income earners, the people who are most insulated. There's no doubt now that people are understanding that this is a problem for them, and they got to do something about it. And so what do? They start to talk to their friends. They try to figure things out, and they, you know, eventually make it to things like Bitcoin. And unfortunately, they also make it to places like Celsius and Luna, but you know, they make it to Bitcoin eventually. And, you know, you convert some number of those speculators into people who understand where the problems are in the traditional finance system. And that's, you know, I think that's a scary thing for a lot of governments. I'd be surprised. You pointed out the Ethereum thing. I have it in my notes here. It's obvious that the problem is that most people hold bags in the US government. It seems to me like that's a fairly high level of certainty outcome at this moment. You know, they're talking about making sure in the language here, what does it say? It would define the terrain between crypto securities and commodities, allowing token issuers to know beforehand whether they're launching what they're launching is based on the purpose of the asset, rights and powers it conveys to the consumer, et cetera. So the Howey test, basically. You know, don't forget, there's video evidence of Vitalik saying that he left America to do part of the development process and send some of the coins overseas because he knew he was going to be skirting securities laws. So it's not like they really care about securities laws if it's going to make them rich, right? Pretty sure. This is obviously something that has to do with the size of the bags they're holding. And after today, Len, and after yesterday, like, I don't want to give these guys any avenues that they don't need or you know, make it any easier for them, you know, beat down some of the bush, flatten some of the bush on the way to a regulatory regime around Bitcoin that it just doesn't need. But no one who's not in Bitcoin understands that crypto is not Bitcoin, and they think that these things are synonymous. They think that the speculation is the same. They think all that stuff is identical, right? And so you're going to get people trying to regulate Bitcoin because of these Ponzi failures. And why would we give them another avenue with a bill like this? I got to say, like, you know, we give Cynthia Lummis, I think, enough love on the show, but like, this is, I mean, I can't be the only person who's got nothing but disappointment for this. Like,
obviously I had it.
Yeah, I you know what I mean? Like, we can't be alone. I think a lot of Lummis faithfuls got to be, you know, it's ugly, man. It's like Wolverine on the bed holding the picture of, I guess it's Jean Grey or Rogue. Who did Wolverine
date? That is a reference.
Who did he date in X-Men?
I never know. Watching X-Men.
Before your time or after your time?
I don't care about the superhero stuff.
It was the cartoon. The cartoons were good. This is a story for after the show, whether or not live action Marvel movies ruined the cartoons. They absolutely did. But anyway, that's all I got to say, man. Disappointing, but not surprised. Like we say so often, disappointing, but not surprising.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep things moving along. There's still lots to talk about on this show. I want to talk about the May 2022 CPI and a little bit more on that as well. And the CPI print came in and we're sitting now at 8.6%. This is in the United States. And it's the highest in 40 years. We keep saying the same thing over and over again every month. And here we are shaking our heads. And the dartboard that the economists were using, where they were predicting 8.3% year over year. So like a drunk man trying to take a piss in the dark, they fucking missed their target. And without getting into the specifics here, what made up the 8.6% increase, I want to just take a look at some of the concerning stats. Real inflation's declined 0.6% from April. And it fell 3% on a 12-month basis. That shows you that there's proof that wages are not keeping up with rising cost. And there are still estimates that the Fed will be raising rates as much as another to get as high as 2.75% by the end of the year. And we're currently sitting right now at 1%. And this would mean a substantial jump in the next 6.5 months. But it's probably possible, given the fact that there's even talk of another 1% increase, a 100 basis point jump in the next week or so. So this is, it's quite possible 2.75% is realistically in the cards here. And with a massive increase in rates like that, it's going to be impacting servicing debt. And let's talk a little bit about that. In April, the consumer credit came in at a whopping increase of $38 billion. And this is another miss by economists, and they were predicting $35 billion. They really need to sharpen their dart throwing skills. They're off over and over again. And to give more color on this credit issue, revolving credit, and this mostly makes up of credit cards balances, it grew at an annualized rate of 19.6% and now totals $1.1 trillion in April. That's just breaking the pre-pandemic record of $1.1 trillion. So it's incredible to see how much credit is going to be people are now accumulating. And for those keeping score at home, credit balances were on the decline at the start of this pandemic as people were more inclined to spend their money wisely when they got stimulus packages. But this trend has since reversed. And those who have access to credit info, they noticed a sharp run-up in balances in credit cards. This is scary stuff. And reading between the lines here, with the economy having issues, markets tanking, wages stagnant, and interest rates rising, default on credit is likely in the cards. And this spells trouble for us. And it's going to be, if you want to like gauge how things are moving in the next little month, the canary in the coal mine, in my opinion, is the travel and tourism sector. They've been hit really hard over the last couple of years, two plus years, due to closures. And now with very specific segments of that industry reporting massive year-over-year price increases, like fuel costs for jets, for instance, and with potentially less credit to go around, we will see how well the travel and tourism industry sustains itself over the next several months. Will they bounce back? Will they not? This is the canary in the coal mine. The summer months, it should normally provide them with a good infusion of capital, but customers they're starting to opt out of traveling. And there's a lot of factors that I mentioned earlier before that it's going to make for huge hurdles for people to start spending their money in travel and tourism. So keep your eyes and ears open for possible reports of bankruptcies by these companies that have heavy exposures to these segments. Even Janet Yellen has been warning that inflation is likely to stay high over the next little while. And she might be forced to do a couple of extra speaking engagements to help offset the higher cost of goods. Kudos to her if she does get them. But she also does mention that there's nothing to suggest that a recession is in the works. Yeah, fucking right. We're just a couple of weeks away from actually solidifying this fact. She's saying there's no recession. Kramer's saying there's no recession. You could book it. There's a fucking recession going on. And this is all very interesting stuff from coming from Janet Yellen. We have the former Treasury Secretary, Lawrence Summers. He says that the Fed has failed to account for its mistakes and to realize the damage to its credibility. Damage to credibility, that is saying something. And something may need to be done. And they may start using the excuse of handing out money that was recently printed off the printer as a way to combat higher prices. Seems odd to do this. Well, they're doing it right now in New Zealand. We talked about this in a previous episode. It's also being done now in the United Kingdom. Every household in England, Scotland, and Wales will receive £400 to offset higher energy costs. And this is going to be spread over 6 months starting this October. And they're also going to be giving away £650 starting this July to eligible households. Vulnerable households will also get another £450 in receipt of winter fuel payments. This is something close to UBI. But going back to the CPI report and other important information here, it's also important to note here that the sale of homes in the U.S., they're slowing down. The mortgage activity has hit a 22-year low. Mortgage loan applications dropped 6.5% as of June 3rd. And this is the fourth consecutive weekly decline. And this is all likely due to higher inflation, higher cost to borrow, and so forth. Consumer sentiment is also hit a record low. The University of Michigan's closely watched survey of consumers sentiment index slumped to 50.2 in a preliminary June survey. This is the lowest record that this has ever been. This dates back to the 1970s. It's never been lower than this. It shows you that people are not happy. People are scared what's going on in the economy. It's more proof that we're trending in the wrong direction. And another thing that is trending in the wrong direction is also wealth distribution. It's being reported that the wealthiest 10% of U.S. households now own 89% of all U.S. stocks. And this is a record high, according to new data from the Federal Reserve. That's fucking nuts. This whole system here, we are dealing with a case like the system, the financial system is a house of cards. It will collapse. It's inevitable. It will collapse. It won't collapse tomorrow, probably not next month, but eventually it will collapse. It's backed by nothing but sheer faith, and people are still printing money, giving it to their cronies, and people like us were suffering in the end. People, this is why I Bitcoin. Every time I buy Bitcoin, I'm taking my money out of the system and I'm voting against the existing system. People that continue to use money, Canadian dollar, US dollar, you're perpetuating the use of it, you're perpetuating the system and you're strengthening it. Continue to buy Bitcoin, take your money out, give them the middle finger, because that's the only way we could sustain our wealth, we could sustain our productivity, everything that goes along with it. I'm just pissed off. This drives me nuts to see all these fucking stats.
Sir, you need a drink of water.
Don't, I'm pissed, man.
Hit the ice bucket challenge here. We gotta cool it down. Yeah, should I get one?
But okay, it's fucking
this,
nuts.
This, you're right, though. This would be laughable, I think, if it wasn't so obviously crooked and like just completely destructive policymaking over and over again. The housing, you know what the measured housing growth was for that CPI print?
No, I didn't look at this.
It was 4%. It was 4%. Amazing. So you got also this consumer credit at all time highs, which we talked about a bunch. I absolutely love the consumer credit stat, because the consumer credit stat tells you where the damage is being done and who's trying to hide behind their credit card, right? It's the average person. The person who's the most vulnerable, I would argue, is the one who's really taking the hits here. Now, I found out something the other day that really piqued my interest. You know, you're in the chat right now, you're listening right now. I guarantee in the last hour of surfing the internet, okay, or the last time you went to buy something online, you received an option for a BNPL, buy now, pay later. It's 6 payments over 6 months, no interest, blah, blah, blah. Apple, you know, just jumped on this train too. They're going to run their own out of the Apple Pay wallet in the next little while. Do you know, Len, that not a single dollar spent on any of those services is included in the consumer credit number? None. Zero. Zilch. So all the people who are spending money at the most vulnerable level of income, right? The people who have to do buy now, pay later on Papa John's pizza, they don't get included in that. And those dollars don't get included in that number. That's bad news, man. Okay.
Kicking the can down the road. We'll put it on later on.
It's absolutely brutal. It's absolutely brutal. So also worth noting, you know, Len, over the last, like, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months, I guess, in the stock market, but crypto, 3 months, fuck, even the last like 2 days, how much of that stimmy money is gone now, obliterated, lost in the stock market, lost in Bitcoin and crypto, lost in all, it's gone. The US printed all that fucking money that half the people who got it didn't need, right? It didn't support anyone's standard of living anyways. I think it only ended up being, I think, $3,000 over 12 months, right? Or something like that. Something insanely low.
So you're talking on an individual level, but on a grander scale, like businesses got it too.
Businesses. I mean, yeah, you know, Ross Gerber Kurowski or whatever that guy's name is, like he got a bunch of money in PPP loans. But anyway, that's a story for another time. So if you think about this, if you like kind of like put yourself, you know, if we draw like a timeline, right? It's March 2020, COVID hits, lockdowns. April, May, June 2020, there's stimmy checks going out in most of the modern world. And it happens again, maybe 3 or 4 months later, right? Now, fast forward to, you know, 6 months ago, 5 months ago, when the Fed starts really going hawkish at the FOMC meetings and talking about raising rates and starts to do their raises, 25 and 50 basis points, right? To start. These guys really, really, Len, they gave away all the money. They watched it go into the stock market and then they vaporized it all in the same 18 months. Incredible. It's the same people doing all this. They give the money to you. They watch you put it in the market and they destroy it in the same 18 months. It is incredible stuff. What goes on in the US economy and the broader modern economies around the world. Really insane stuff. Okay. I think inflation is going to really stay high. I'll note here that, you know, if you look at a stock like Amazon, even taking the split into account, because TradingView does take the splits into account and sort of makes those numbers retroactive, it's back at pre-pandemic levels. Did you know that?
Amazon. So, and that's that. If it's pre-pandemic, now take into consideration the added liquidity that's put out there to debase the US dollar. If it's the same now in terms of dollar value, it's not. It's actually
lower. The nominal value is the same, but the real value is significantly less. You're absolutely right. That's a great point. Inflation is going to stay high because fuel is going up every single day, basically. Like if you hold XEG, if you're Canadian who wants to hold like the Nat Gas and fuel, or you hold like Suncor or ExxonMobil, I think the ticker is XOM for that. Like if you hold any of those stocks, you're laughing. Like you've been printing money in your portfolio for 6 months, a year maybe. I think I was looking back at my tweets the other day. The first time I tweeted about this was like May or April of last year. Like just buy oil stocks. There's no better way to make money than to put your cash, your capital into things for which the government thinks it can exercise price control mechanisms. It cannot, and it will fail. And you're going to see the results of that. And it's going to go the other way. You've already seen that in energy. You may see it in other things before it's all said and done. I'll also note that if you want to know whether or not inflation is going to go up or down, we can talk about the Kimmel index. Do you know what the Kimmel index is?
No, I think you referenced it before.
We've never talked about the Kimmel index before. Okay, this is a new index here at the CBP. Okay. It's whether or not you march out the senile president to the Jimmy Kimmel show unscripted in the middle of a fucking recession. Because if you got to do that, I would argue that probably you got a problem. So if the Kimmel index is one or greater than one, you got a real issue in your economy. And they just hit one. They just hit one.
Has right? Trump ever hit the
Kimmel? I don't think he'd have Trump.
I have no idea what it is.
Now, that would be a good show. That's one I would watch. So, you know, you get the Kimmel index problem too now, which has just started to pop up the last 2 weeks. I think he was on there 2 weeks ago or a week ago. We could talk about this peak inflation thing that keeps popping up in, you know, Boomerberg and other blue check media outlets. Oh, we've already hit peak inflation. So do you know peak inflation for people who are listening? Like it means that if the number next month is less than, what was it? 8.6, right? That's the number you gave me.
Yeah.
If it's less than 8.6, if it's 8.4, 8.3, the media is going to celebrate, and the Biden administration and probably other modern governments are going to celebrate. And they're going to go, oh, look, we've already hit peak inflation. This thing is working, blah, blah, blah. We're doing the right things. Is there really any tangible difference for the average person if the prices go up 8.6% or 8.4%, Len? Do you know the answer to that question?
The answer is no. If you're like looking at 0.2% when it's that high, it means nothing.
The answer is no. Okay. It's like when the White House tweeted out that thing about your summer barbecue being 6 cents cheaper this year, thanks to Bidenomics or whatever. That was last year. You got to remember that tweet if you haven't seen
it. People pocketed that 6 cents. Don't laugh.
Yeah. They put in Terra and Celsius trying to look for 125% APY. So now you got a couple other things here to talk about when it comes to whether or not you think the economy is in good shape. Mortgage applications are dropping, okay, in the U.S. to levels that haven't been seen, I think, in almost 15 or 20 years. But again, we'll do this timeline thing since it's not that hard to figure out. Okay. Mortgage applications dropping leads to lower numbers of family starts, leads to worse demographics for the workforce, leads to more immigration needs, leads to more government subsidy programs for housing and just general social support for new citizens, leads to more housing crunch, leads to more inflation, leads to mortgage applications going down, and the flywheel spins. Now, if me and you can put that together here, okay. You know, you're wearing a t-shirt you got for free. I'm wearing a pink bandana I found in the laundry 3 weeks ago. If we can put that together, certainly Janet, $810,000 for a speech yelling, can put that together. Can she not? Of course she can. And so, yeah, I believe that she is lying when she says she doesn't know. A few other notable things here I saw in my quest to uncover the best information for the listeners and viewers. The M2 money stock versus the S&P shows now that the S&P is, significantly falling behind the M2 money supply. So even if you're making money on the S&P, the M2 money supply is really debasing you at a pace that it hasn't before. Okay. Other notable chart here, and I'm going to try and make this bigger for myself, although I don't know if I can. So I'm going to have to look away from the camera here for a second. This is from a Bloomberg. It's the U.S. labor force participation rate from the BLS in the States. It starts in 1955. Do you know what the labor participation rate was for 25s to 54s in 1955 was?
Very, very high. Very high.
Yes. Okay. What do you think it was?
80%?
It was 95%. You know what it is now?
65.
No, it's 88. But, it's in a very steady downward channel. Very steady. It is yet to break in 70 years. Okay, so you want to talk about strength on a chart? The crayon guys are going to love that chart. There's another thing I'll just read a couple of excerpts from here from an inflation point of view from a Zero Hedge article. It says, is inflation moral? Now with inflation raging at a 40-year high, the money masters who started this problem are tasked with stopping it. It talks about here how Janet Yellen is one of the biggest screw-ups in the world. You see, Janet Yellen is a faux screw-up. She feigns ignorance and befuddlement over today's inflation. A year ago, Janet Yellen said there'd only be a small risk of inflation, that it would be manageable, Now Yellen says she was wrong about the path inflation would take. The truth is Yellen loves inflation. She is passionate about it. She spent her whole career advocating for it. Here's a good one for you. In 1995, at an FOMC meeting, Yellen argued in favor of allowing inflation to exceed inflation targets for moral reasons. She said, "To me, a wise and humane policy is occasionally to let inflation rise, even when inflation is running above target." Yellen's rationale was the tired-old argument that inflation stimulates demand and demand stimulates jobs, and that it's wise and humane to have low unemployment. This, however, is merely feigned justification. She's an inflationista. She's been talking about it. She likes inflation. That's a 25, 27-year-old quote, but you know that's something that she believes and has believed for a time. Okay. Then you got this stuff about Biden and what he's been doing, you know, and it's not just him. There's a number of other people involved in that policy making, but like, you know, Lem, he's talking about gouging all the time. He's talking about corporate greed and all these sorts of things. You know, if you had to guess whether or not he was going to use price controls at some point, what would you say? Yes or
for
no?
For sure.
For sure. On petrol, on petrol, it seems to me.
I was just going
to
go there. Yeah.
Candidate.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's probably true. So this is a really good quote here. Because not only is Biden a screw-up, he's surrounded by screw-ups. On the economic front, this is particularly true. For example, the EPA recently mandated Americans take more of their food and burn it in the form of corn ethanol in their gas tanks. We talked about this. This is a dumb thing to do, even in the best of times. But in a looming food shortage, this is absolutely absurd. These are the types of destructive decisions made by people who suffer no consequences for their actions. They sit in climate-controlled offices. They read and send emails all day. They attend meetings. They lead task forces. They build consensus. Absolutely damning. Absolutely damning. It's spot on. It's just unbelievable that there's no consequence for any of this stuff. You noted the consumer sentiment there. Do you know the Federal Reserve has never raised rates when that sentiment was under 60? And now it's, I think, 50 and change, right? 50.2. They've 50. Never raised rates, even 25 bips, when it was under 60.
We're living different times, Joey. The past 2 years and change, it's everything's been flipped upside down. And you got to throw it all the old jargon out the window. You can't use the metrics that we've used before.
We gonna see. I think you're right, but it's interesting all the same. Supply chain as a cause for a lot of this inflation. We talked about this before too. Inflation in services is as bad as it's ever been. It's about 6% now. You can't argue with that. That's not caused by supply chain. It's structural. It's economically ingrained now, entrenched. And I think it's going to continue to accelerate. I don't see how it doesn't. Boomer in the chat is asking who wrote that article. I'll send you the link after the show. Really good on Zero Hedge from a couple of days ago. And so, you know, Len, you know, I don't like the way this is going. And so to your point about Bitcoin, like, yeah, the price is down today. How should you view that if you're a Bitcoiner? Should you say I already have enough and I'm going to try and maybe not buy Bitcoin this month or this week or this you know, quarter because I don't know. I want to invest in the stock market. Like, you know, I have some equities positions too, but on days like today, I'm not thinking about my TFSA at all. I'm thinking about how much can I pump in there? You know, how close can I bottom tick? I got to increase my DCA, all that stuff, because I just don't see this ending any way but in disaster in the fiat realm because of the stuff that's going on. It just seems so unlikely.
We shared the same outcome, at least what we're perceiving, what will happen. And every day I get more bullish with Bitcoin. The fundamentals, regardless of the price going down, the fundamentals have not changed. And the fundamentals are so strong. Good money will always drive out bad money. Bad money is the US dollar. The bad money is the Canadian dollar. And the good money is Bitcoin. And eventually the money will flow into that en masse. This is a minor setback. It went down in price. That's fine. But in the end, I have no faith in the people sitting in the White House or the Federal Reserve that are going to be able to turn this thing around and make it good for ourselves, that the price of that inflation is going to be to a point where we're going to be 2% again and people will be fully employed and the supply chain is going to be working a full clip. Right now we have issues in China. They're shutting down more cities. Shanghai has reported some lockdowns over there. That's where we get all our goods.
I want to give you one more thing before you, Before we leave this from the Atlanta Fed in terms of whether or not we are in a recession. Let me just find this. So these guys do something called a GDP Now estimate. And so they basically project out what they think the GDP is going to be for the quarter. So they started the nowcast at 1.9%. Then here they have, you know, a number of different releases on the day.
And this is the most bullish of the federal offices.
That's right. And so now that projection is 0.9% growth. So they've cut it in half and then some since they started to do the projection for this quarter. So if you had to guess, you know, whether or not they were going to, you know, adjust downward and eventually you'd be in, you know, contraction for the second quarter in a row. You're there. Whatever. There's nothing you could tell me, honestly, even if they funhouse mirror all the numbers and make it, you know, 0.1% growth or something like that. I refuse to buy it because there's too many signs that everything is going the other way. There's too many signs. There's no way you can convince me that's a growing economy or a healthy economy. I just refuse.
It is not. It's not on its last legs, but it's on its way out. And yeah, like I said, this is why I Bitcoin. Let's move on, Joey. There's still lots to talk about. I don't want to talk about Bitcoin in Canada. We had a very interesting statement that was released this past week by the Bank of Canada. They are reporting that 13% of Canadians own Bitcoin. And this is up from last year, a 5% increase. Last year, we were sitting at 7%. Now we're sitting at 13%. So not quite double, but still an impressive jump since 2021. And the median holding of Bitcoin was about $500 at the time of writing this. It's probably since gone down given the price of Bitcoin in the past 48 hours. And they're saying it's mostly for investment purposes. And I'm not sure if they're talking about these people that bought it. Is this the Bitcoin, the asset, or is this also exposure into Bitcoin ETFs? I'm not exactly sure because it didn't go into the specifics. But still, nonetheless, 13% owning Bitcoin is rather an impressive jump from 7%. And could this rate continue or accelerate over time? Potentially. And as the market continues to grow in numbers, and it will, even though we had a drawback in price, the number of people getting in Bitcoin will increase. So will the worries by the Chartered Bank and the Bank of Canada, Chartered Banks and the Bank of Canada, since Bitcoin, it will crush them all. It's going to make them all irrelevant. For them, the bread and butter, we're talking about the Chartered Banks, are loans. And this is also tied into the creation of money. And this is the failed system that they set up. And this will not work under a Bitcoin standard. And so there must be some real big concerns coming from the bank and also the Bank of Canada, the central bank, and also the charter banks, that, and they must be acknowledging that things are going to be changing moving forward. And for example, we had Carolyn Rogers. She's the senior deputy governor of the Bank of Canada. So she's a very senior individual there. She's identified cryptocurrency as a point of vulnerability in the Canadian economy. We've heard this song and dance before. She's mentioned that new regulations will need to be enacted to start keeping pace with the rapid growth and development of assets like Bitcoin. And what this shows me is the Bank of Canada has their crosshairs on Bitcoin, and they're going to start releasing new rules that may try to inhibit the use and adoption of Bitcoin. But this also could take into consideration the markets are getting slammed due to higher inflation, higher rates, etc. The adoption of Bitcoin will soar once it eventually decouples from the markets, because right now there seems to be a very strong correlation between the NASDAQ, I'm going to use them as an example, and Bitcoin. I believe in the past 100 trading days, around 75-ish, they went both the NASDAQ and Bitcoin, they went up and down the same rate approximately. And 25 days, they were decoupled. So for the most part, where the NASDAQ goes, if it goes up, so will the price of Bitcoin. And if the NASDAQ goes down, so will the price of Bitcoin. So we also had some words from the governor, Tiff Macklin. He's starting to ask if households could also stomach a much larger than a 50 basis points increase. And could we take stronger measures to deal with rising costs? And this is all going to be in correlation with Bitcoin, because as well as they're going to be raising rates, it's going to further drag down the economy, cooling the housing market, and you know it's going to make it more attractive to get in Bitcoin. In fact, the Bank of Canada is saying that housing costs may jump, the mortgage payments may jump by 45% by 2025-26. And that's going to force people to reassess their spending habits. At that time, there's going to be less money spent on impulse purchases, vacations, and people will need to find better deals on food and clothing. Older cars will have to remain on the road much, much longer. And again, like I mentioned before, it's going to make real estate less of an attractive purchase, which brings us back to Bitcoin. And I talked about it just not too long ago. The fundamentals of Bitcoin, they're strong, and it will ultimately draw in new users, and the good money will draw out the bad money as well. And in the case of this case, it's going to drive out the Canadian dollar. And I'm expecting, and this is just, it's not going to knock anybody's socks off, I'm expecting Bitcoin adoption to increase in Canada, which really isn't going to be surprising. How much is it going to increase? I don't know, but it will continue to increase. It's inevitable. It's trending in that direction. But there's going to be a lot of hurdles that they're going to try to impose on users. And it's going to be likely through regulations, because the Bank of Canada, they do not want to lose grip of the power that they have accumulated to this point. So what I have to say, my friends, is keep stacking Bitcoin. This is the only way.
It's time to start caring about security heuristics, isn't it? You know, make sure you got as much private Bitcoin as you can. I didn't write a lot of stuff for this story, Len. I just think I look at stuff like this, where the growth in the number of people who've adopted Bitcoin, whatever adopted means in this case, is you know, staggering, almost a double. If it doubles again next year, or we get something close to that, you're talking 20% plus at that point. Then the Bank of Canada's got a real problem on their hands. I would say that the other thing that is sort of note is that the demographics are in our favor. As boomers age out, you're going to have more people willing to spend money on Bitcoin than they are TFSAs, more money on Bitcoin than they are gold, because real estate has gotten away from so many people, more money on Bitcoin than real estate. And so the same policies that the Bank of Canada just seems unwilling to contribute to changing and fixing are the ones that are going to cause people to lean on Bitcoin even more. I don't want to go after Macklem or the other woman you mentioned, because I don't know enough about the BOC hierarchy to say one way or the other, who's in charge, who's not, things of this nature. I don't think Macklem, I think Macklem probably has a picture of Jerome Powell on his bedside. Like, he wishes he was that cool and that popular. Like, I don't think anyone's ever going to, no one from GQ is calling Tiff Macklem to do a style section feature. Right. So that aside, I think that Canada's got a real nice shot here to be a Bitcoin player because of the oil and gas, obviously, and because I think the demographics here lend themselves to something that is really promising. You know, if we get a 20% adoption rate, 20% HODL rate, that's a voting block. You know, like 20% is a nice chunk of people who would vote a certain way in provincial and federal elections. And it's hard to argue with that, right? And that's the thing you're looking for if you're someone who thinks that adoption rate matters. That's got to be, one of the watershed moments on that curve. Do you think that it's fair to say, that politicians that are anti-Bitcoin are also starting to age out? I think it's probably fair to say. It seems to me that, if I look at question period, it's a lot of 55 and up and a lot of, 40 and down. There's not much in between, right? And I think a lot of those people who are 40 and down, they probably get it too. They probably had some of the same struggles. Like, I'm not quite 40, but they're not exempt from having kids or thinking about these things for their children, how hard it's going to be to buy a home or go to school or whatever. Right. And if the Bank of Canada is truly arm's length, then they can't influence that as much as they want. So what's the next logical step? It's Bitcoin. It's the next logical step. That should be on the banner. Bitcoin. It's the next logical step. Because really, like, no matter how you slice it, you're going to get there if you're honest with yourself about what comes next. And so I hope that number grows again, man. 13%. That's very exciting stuff. Very exciting stuff.
It's quite a big jump from 7%. And I think a lot of that has to do with people working from home and then having more time to learn about what is Bitcoin. And it did get a lot of press last year because it hit two new all-time highs. We hit 69,000 in November, and in March of last year, was it around $64,000,
$65,000? We hit 60 for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was actually before our first episode. I remember that too. So that's dating our show. But it got a lot of press. And when that happens, it's going to attract new users. And I think the ETFs, because it didn't outline it, both of us were questioning if this involves ETFs. If it does, then 13%, I can understand why it got there so quickly, because the ETFs were also released last year, I think around April, if I recall correctly. But
yeah.
So yeah, that's it for the A block. I got a couple of stories on the Canadian side that I want to talk about. And Canada's Parliamentary Budget Officer, the PBO, they released a report that says Canadian consumers and businesses expect inflation to creep up in the short term, but long-term expectations remain unanchored.
Holy Christ.
So what this means is that wages have not kept up with inflation in Canada for the time being. And we have some I'm trying to word this. On the, in the House of Commons, we have the official opposition, the Conservatives. They're calling for a temporary gas tax holiday, and they also want to end tariffs on fertilizer. And this is going to potentially lead to lower prices at the pumps and also lower prices at the grocery store. And the NDP are also doing their thing, and they're proposing higher taxes on corporate, quote unquote, excess profits. Not sure exactly how this is going to achieve lower prices in the end, but it will potentially rake in some new revenue for the federal government, and whatever they do with it, it's up to them. It's up to their discretion. But yeah, so Canada is not exempt. We talked about in the States how wages have not kept up with inflation. Canada is in the same boat as well. And that's no surprise to me. And I'm sure everybody else understands this. So yeah, not looking good moving forward. And we have some ideas on how to address higher prices moving forward by different parties in the House of Commons. Yeah, it's interesting nonetheless. And let's see what happens moving forward.
They really should do the gas tax holiday. The problem is that if they do it, it'll never be popular to put it back in. So they can't go backwards on that policy. Anecdotal point here about the cost of things and wages. I went to a restaurant yesterday that is probably like, you know, middle of the road as far as what you should expect to pay. Not quite on the high end, but not quite on the low end either. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, was our first anniversary yesterday.
Oh, so congratulations.
Thanks, buddy. Hopefully many more. And so so we get to the restaurant, and we notice right away the menu has some pretty high numbers in the price column. And so I was saying to her, like, you know, is it fair to say that, you know, this place should really cost $200 for two people to eat? Like, I don't know if it is or not. You know, I got a couple of beers, she got a couple of martinis, and we got like a dessert to split, but it's still more than $200. And, you know, Len, do I think the waitress is seeing her, you know, her wage go up to that level? Somehow I doubt it, you know? Somehow I doubt it. And that's happening all over the place. It's not just in restaurants, it's retailers, it's, you know, service, it's everywhere. And I mean, at what point, like, something's got to break, right? People are not just going to keep going to work if they can't live anyways. Like, why would they keep going to work if they don't get anything out of it? You go to work because you want to live a better life and stuff like that, right? But I can't imagine, you know, continuing to work in a scenario where, you know, if you went on government assistance or something, you'd do just as well. And that brings us to the other, you know, UBI point that we talk about all the time. Like, how far are we away from that? I don't know, but closer than ever. And thank you to you guys in the chat for congratulating me. It's, you know, a year's not that long. Let's see if I make it four more at least or something before we go too crazy. But yeah, it's interesting, man. Like and so this is, you know, when people talk about the inflation spiral, Len, it's inflation in goods to inflation in wages to more inflation in goods to more inflation in wages, et cetera, and on, right? So all this to say that it's just one more gust of wind, you know, at the base of this house of cards, and it's starting to pick up, right? It's only a matter of time.
Hirai is mentioning that there was a gas tax holiday that took place in Alberta and it made a big difference. He's noting that it's now unfortunately gone. So that's, I know in Ontario that the premier was talking about lowering taxes starting in July.
He wants to do something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I do have to note that there is, the federal tax is percentage based. So as the price of gas goes up, so does the revenue collected by the federal government, because it's HST and it's percentage based. So that's, I'm just throwing this out there. So now that gas is north of $2 and, you know, if you're paying HST on top of that, at least here in Ontario, other provinces don't have that. So that's a percentage based tax. So they're collecting more revenue as a result. So maybe there's an opportunity to lower the price of taxes on gasoline in Ontario, but I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
Let's run for public office. Can we get on the ticket?
No, I'm not. No, no way. Okay. All right. I'm happy where I am.
Well, that's the end of that.
Yeah, sorry. Don't vote me in. Yeah, moving on. Just the last Canadian story I have is actually quite sad, and it's kind of tapping into what you were talking about. One in five Canadians right now are using food banks, which is quite a lot. And a survey found that one in five, and they're saying 23%, that's almost one in four of households, are eating less. And you talked about this last week.
This is the Canadian version. I saw this today. So it's funny that you have this in the stories. Incredible, man.
Yeah. Well, you talked about this, I think, last week. So I want to put shine a light on this. So one in five, they're saying 23% of households are eating less than they should. And this is due to a lack of cash. About 1 in 3 households are earning less than $50,000 per year, as per this report, and they're not earning enough to feed themselves. This is the end result of what happens when things get too expensive. Food and shelter are the basic needs to survive. If you're cutting away one of the two, that just goes to show you how dire things are, and it's only going to get worse. If people are skipping meals and eating less, Venezuela, I like using them as an example. So many documentaries I like watching, you can see people over there, and they show pictures of where they were before. A few years ago, they were, you know, much, much healthier, and now they're like skeletons of themselves because they can't afford to eat right now because the Bolivar has been whittled down to nothing. Same thing might happen in Canada. This is really scary stuff. So pay attention. Stock up on food if you can right now, as the prices are relatively cheap. Canned goods like tuna, beans, things like that could be stored for a long time. Eventually, the prices.
I can't believe you're saying this. I honestly cannot believe that this is what we're talking about.
Well, it makes sense. If you can't afford it now, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? And this is stuff that doesn't go bad. And if should there also be a shortage in food production too, it's good to have a healthy supply in your house. So that's just my 2 cents, Joey. And I'm not sure if you want to add any more flavor to this.
Yeah, I just want to show the Maslow's hierarchy of needs pyramid here that everyone has seen. Len, I don't know if you've seen the new version of this. I was looking for it, but right under here, there's actually one more. It's 125% APY yield farming.
Makes sense. And then under that, you need a rug that's just ready to just be fucking pulled. And that would be the ultimate visualization of what. So yeah. Anything else you want to like add to this story?
No, I mean, it's pretty sad. I'm not eating the fucking bugs. I'm not living in the pod. I will do whatever it takes.
Yeah. See, John is mentioning fill your freezers with meat. Agreed. Yeah, that's a good idea. All right. So that's it for the Canadian news. I want to talk about a few stories as the rest of the news. And right now, the Fred blog was comparing egg prices in US dollars versus Bitcoin. I'm not sure if you saw this, Joey. A few days ago, we had this. What world are we living in now that the Federal Reserve is talking about US dollars versus Bitcoin and pricing shit in Bitcoin? This is great. This is great advertisement for Bitcoin. What is this trying to achieve, though? Like, I don't understand what's their end game here. They're giving us free publicity. And in the end, this is what's going to happen. We're going to have shit priced in Satoshi. So thank you very much, Federal Reserve. You're doing our job for us.
Okay, so I'm pulling this up. It's a good chart. Here's the thing they're trying to illustrate, okay?
The volatility. You
know, that you're paying a lot more for eggs now if you're pricing the eggs in Bitcoin. Now, obviously, Len, the problem, okay, is that they have the chart starting in January. And so while the Fred may think that the data people over there are supporting their cause, they are not, sir. Because if you stretch this chart out a little more, you're paying a lot fucking less if you're pricing in Bitcoin. I don't know who at the Federal Reserve, like the St. Louis Fed, didn't think to maybe stretch this chart out a little bit before talking about it and putting it on the internet. But God bless the data guys over there. We got there's Bitcoiners everywhere, Len, doing good work. It's not just you and me and the people in the chat. It's even at the Federal Reserve of St. Louis, making sure that if you just stretch the chart a little more, you can see the increased buying power with Bitcoin. Good stuff. Love to see it. Love to see it.
So let's talk about BlockFi. And they were set to close a funding round of a $1 billion valuation. This is much lower than a previous fundraise. So it looks like that the valuation of BlockFi has gone down over time. Not only that, from what I understand, they're going to be laying off 20% of their workforce. And this is not a good sign for BlockFi. It's a sign of the times that things are going to be really rough in the DeFi space. And BlockFi is going to be one of the companies that's going to be tightening their belts as they're going to be employing less and less people moving forward. Very sad stuff for the people that are going to be given a pink slip because it's not a good environment to start looking for a job. Yeah. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, Zach Prince, the CEO of BlockFi, used to do public appearances fairly often. He was a semi-regular guest on, not the Compound of Friends, Animal Spirits, one of the other pods on that network. And he doesn't go on anymore, obviously. And, you know, Zach Prince, we'll talk a bit about, Zach Prince and his ilk later in the show in the NoCoiner section, I suspect. I was honestly thinking today that I should have touched base with you to see who your Bitcoiner of the Week and NoCoiner of the Week was, because I bet you we have the same for both.
Anyway, have something...
You got something off the beaten path? Good.
No. I have a surprise for you that I'll save it for a few when we talk about it. It's not a great surprise though.
Okay. You're not supposed to say that about surprises.
It's not very good. I'm just prepping you.
So you got Prince, who yesterday in the Celsius, like, you know, turmoil, was tweeting like many other exchanges and you know, companies that are crypto adjacent, Bitcoin adjacent, that everything at BlockFi is good, everything's working as well as it could be. We're on track, no issues to report, your funds are not in danger, blah, blah, blah. Tweeting like you had some strength, right? Like your foundation was strong. And then today they announced they're laying off 1 in 5 people. Unreal, man. It's a shitty situation, but it's made shittier by behavior like that. Frustrating to see for sure. And even more frustrating if if your life is tied to a BlockFi paycheck, it sucks.
And the last story I have to talk about is in the state of Washington, they are imposing an increase on electricity rates for Bitcoin miners, and the increase is 29% increase. That's significantly higher than before. From what I understand, Bitfarms does have some mining operations in Washington state, so that their operations obviously are going to be impacted as well, including the other ones, but Bitfarms is the one that immediately comes to mind. So this is very sad stuff. I think we're going to have some more stories like this as we continue to move forward, because there's a real attack against proof of work. There's a real attack against the energy consumption of Bitcoin. There's a real attack against Bitcoin itself, because obviously it doesn't jive well with the current financial system with fractional reserve systems and lending out money and all this shit. So it's rubbing the rubbing against the grain when you're talking to the Federal Reserve, central banks, and even other banks as well. So this is going to happen more in states in the United States. Probably not so in, I hope not in Texas, hope not in Georgia, because they're one of the bigger Bitcoin miners, but Bitcoin mining states. But yeah, New York, they banned proof of work. California surprisingly has a large number of Bitcoin miners over there. I suspect they're going to do the same thing moving forward, especially because they have electricity issues. So yeah, it's sad stuff about Bitcoin because everybody seems to be attacking it from all different angles.
There's going to be welcome states that want to have that business and want to have that brain power and want to bring those people into their jurisdiction. Perfect. Let's do it. Let's start really building the citadels at the state level, right? Start with that provincial level, start with that. And, force the hand of people who want to be detrimental to a new technology in a way that they've never had their hand forced before as a politician, right? Like I said many times, I think there's a lot of fair weather political institutions, political personalities all over the modern world that, they see this stuff and they're not really ready to engage with it in any other way than an outright ban, right? And it's sad, but also, you mentioned this earlier when we were talking about bans and the Lummis legislation and whatnot. You can't stop Bitcoin. Like, you either embrace it or you push it somewhere else, but it's not going away. You know, what does it take for these people to understand that? I cannot get my head around this sort of stubbornness. Apart from saying that it's very clear they just don't want to relinquish control, which, you know, is sad, but it's what state of affairs, man. It's not going to change. It's going to get worse before it gets better, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely going to get a hell of a lot worse, I think.
Some people in the chat are saying that New York stuff, like Hi Ryan Boomer, it's just a memorandum at the moment and it's not going to pass. Maybe not. I hope not, but you never know.
Well, it's waiting signature by the governor, from what I understand. She has yet to sign it, but we'll see what happens. And this, I've talked about this on our mining episodes a few times. It's only for new operations that are using carbon-based type power generating. So, I forget which company. Greenidge is not impacted because they already been given approval to do mining. So it's only new mining operations, not existing mining operations, that are going to be impacted. But yeah, that's it for the news items. The reason why I talked about the Bitcoin NoCoiner, I don't have one this week. And the reason why is because I wanted to get one, but I couldn't find either of the two that satisfied my needs. So unfortunately, I don't have one, but you have one. So before we go into it,
Jesus Christ, the only thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago when Tahini's agreed to, put their name on the thing, is that every week we got to have one. It's the second fucking week and you don't have either one.
I couldn't wait
till you hear mine. It's going to be so obvious. I thought for sure we'd have the same ones. Anyway, introduce the segment.
So this segment is brought to you by Tahini's Restaurant. It has 13 locations in Southern Ontario. If you are nearby one, you should certainly seek one out. If you're even within a couple of hours, drive out to one. If you're not, you're a no-coiner. So
couple great place. Hours.
Yeah, it's worth it, man. It's worth it's tahinis. And maybe you could even meet Ali at one of them, but I guess he's primarily in the London area from what I understand. But yeah, sponsored by tahinis. Check them out. I ate there just last Friday. Yeah, I got some I got a shawarma last week. It was really good.
So okay, Bitcoin of the week, no brainer. It's Corey Clipston, is it not?
That's a good one.
Of course. Yeah. Len, the guy he's the Grim Reaper meme. Okay. He's knocking on doors with the scythe out. And he's taken heads. He scalped now Terra, and now he scalped Celsius. Who's next? I was on a Spaces with him today, not on it. Like I was in it and he was speaking. And he's saying he doesn't have another name ready to expose. But like there's many other companies with very similar models that to me are in danger of failing. Plate Liquor, yeah, the Bitcoin of the week should be whoever made that chart. I know, the best. They shrink it so it looks bad. All you have to do is drag that thing out. God, Bullard, you idiot. You should ask. Someone in Bullard's staff should ask that at least. So Corey's my Bitcoin of the week. No coiner of the week. Len, easy. It's Alex Mashinsky, a.k.a. Alex Muskamsky, a.k.a. Alex Maship is sinking ski. Like, total joke.
He's the CEO of Celsius.
Total joke. Tweeting out just the day before that everything was fine, nothing was wrong, blah, blah, blah. Not even 12 hours later, the company's insolvent and the man is in hiding. Unbelievable, man. Unbelievable.
What happened to a space today, if you want to talk about that?
What space?
There was supposed to be a space today.
That was a couple of days ago.
Oh,
yeah. He lost his voice and couldn't do it. The guy's, buddy, he's on the phone with Gerald Cotton trying to figure out if he can get crones and die in India just like him.
What else can I say?
He's trying to figure it out. He's like, I need the Indian crone's death. Who do I talk to?
Fake the death certificate, and he's living on an island somewhere in Goa.
Unreal. Anyway, yeah, so that was easy for this week. No brainer.
I was close to using Janet Yellen, but I couldn't get there because she was saying that she wasn't going to be able to recommend to most people that Bitcoin is good for their savings for retirement. I mean, I could kind of get that she's not recommending to most people. Anyways, she could be a no coiner every week. I was close to picking her. I was also close to picking somebody that wrote an article in Yahoo Finance and saying that Janet Yellen, her humility on inflation is refreshing. I was very close to using that person because clearly Janet Yellen does not have any humility when it comes to inflation. But again, I don't want to fake it.
I hate all these people. I honestly do. They hate me and I hate them. And you know, if they ever want to have a glass of wine and talk about it, I'm happy to, but like, let's start calling a spade.
Yeah.
When
I have a no corner, like I really want to rip into them, and I couldn't get enough. I didn't have the vibe there. So hopefully next week I'll have a good one to really just dive into and just show them that they're a fucking no corner. But yeah,
there you go. Nothing for this week. Yeah. That's great. Okay. That's a wrap. What's the price of Bitcoin
in Canadian or US?
Well, I'll give you two in US, 22,400 right now.
$29,046. Dollars in Canadian dollars. Not
make sure bad. You're here on Wednesday night for Corey, 7 o'clock Eastern. We're going to be talking to the man himself, the Grim Reaper. If you're on audio, go over to video, watch the next 15 minutes where we talk about whether or not the live action Marvel movies ruin the cartoons, among other things. In the meantime, take care of yourself. God bless.
Take care.